of my bunk in the dugout. We are occupying part of a line of trenches running parallel to the German and varying from 70 to 180 yards from them. At the moment, there is practically no rifle fire on either side, except for a German sniper or two who is having a few chance shot at a traverse 2 or 3 yards to the right of his hut. 2 bullets have just skimmed along the roof, but as this is well covered with sandbags, there is no danger inside. The shells come straight over the trenches, and you hear the first dull boom as they leave the muzzle of the gun, and then the scream of the shell passing overhead, ending in a crash as it bursts. This is going on as I write now. I have just been outside in the trench watching it all. You dare not put your head over the front parapet of the trench for even a second, of course, or the German snipers would pit you. But by peeping round the corner or using a periscope, you can just see the clouds of smoke from the bursting shells. The smoke is mostly green, lyddite, but sometimes black from the large howitzer shells, or tinged red with dust from the falling brickwork. But they have just ordered us by telephone to keep under cover because of the danger from the fragments blown back from our own bursting shells. 4 p.m. same day. The guns have been at it again this afternoon, and the Germans have been shelling our communication trenches behind in return. The continued noise is trying and has given me a headache. Stray bullets are always flying overhead, especially at night, but no one minds them. After dark, they rarely see you plainly enough to aim at. In the daytime, you are safe enough if you keep your head down. The dangerous part is getting in and out of the trenches. 2 men got hit last night just after they'd got out. We met them being carried off on stretchers as we were coming in. Cheerful introduction to life in the trenches, Nespa? None of our men have been touched yet, though a bullet whizzed uncomfortably near my head on the way in last night. Soon, perhaps, I may see death come to someone near and realize it and be afraid. I have not yet been afraid. It is just getting dusk, and the Russian parties will be coming in to take back letters with them. This letter will have been carried under fire by the time it reaches you. Good night, and much love. I have just been kissing your photograph.
I shudder to think that even as I read your letter, you may be in danger from those very guns which you heard thundering in the distance. And yet all my fears are sometimes strangely overruled by a store of faith in your future. Edward seems to be enjoying himself very much just now. He is learning to ride, and has opportunities for tennis and innumerable concerts. I suppose it is part of his usual luck. Life always seems to go well for him, helped by his temperament, or lack of it. But sometimes I wonder if it is not compensation for what is to come. Dear Edward, I really must write and tell you about some most thrilling letters I've had from Roland, all about what it is like out there. I feel I should give anything to be there with him. I quite envy you. Don't you feel you wouldn't miss it for anything? Somehow, it seems as if to die out there wouldn't be so very hard as it would anywhere else.
Your last 2 letters came one last night and one the night before, and I read them by candlelight, sitting on the little wooden bench outside my dugout. I'm sitting there now, writing this, while the sun shines on the paper and a bee is humming round and round the bed of primroses in front of me. War and primroses. At the moment, it does not seem as if there could be such a thing as war. At times, I can quite forget danger and war and death, and think only of the beauty of life, and love, and you. Everything is in such grim contrast here. I went up yesterday morning to my fire trench through the sunlit wood, and found the body of a dead British soldier hidden in the undergrowth a few yards from the path. He must have been shot in the early part of the war and lain forgotten all this time. The ground was slightly marshy and the body had sunk down into it so that only the toes of his boots stuck up above the soil. His cap and equipment were just by the side, half buried and rotting away. I am having a mound of earth thrown over him to add one more to the other little graves in the wood. There is nothing glorious in trench warfare. It is all a waiting and a waiting and a taking of petty advantages. And those who can wait longest win. And it is all for nothing. For an empty name, for an ideal, perhaps, after all.
Oxford, 25th of April, 1915. Yes. Tell me all the gruesome things you see. I want your new life to be mine to as great an extent as is possible. Women are no longer the